Hello, and welcome to Distillery Sessions, the podcast from Distillery. My name is Peter Hoffer, and today I am joined by Will Hyde, a UK-based travel writer and journalist with over 20 years of experience. Now, Will has written articles for publications such as The Times, The Sunday Times, The Daily Telegraph, The Daily Mail, The National Geographic Traveler, and British Airways High Life magazine, just to name a few. So, Will, welcome.
Hello, how are you doing?
Great, how are you doing?
I am all right, thank you. I've got my tea, I've got my glass of water, I'm all set.
That's the essential sort of then.
Yeah, especially the tea, yeah.
All right, well, so perhaps to kick off, could you give us a brief intro about you and your experience with travel writing?
Well, as you said, I've been doing it for over 20 years now, which is quite scary just to think about it. I was at university in Scotland, and I've always loved traveling, and I'd work in various jobs and then go off traveling. And after university, I kind of got funneled into working for a corporate bank in the city of London. And I absolutely loathed every second of it. It did me pay off some traveling debts. And I think I'd been there about 6 months, and one day I was crossing over London Bridge. And I don't know if you've seen those, you know, classic images of everyone schlepping over London Bridge into the city, but, you know, they're all going one way like lemmings into the London Bridge station. And I just thought one day, I can't do this anymore. I'm so bored. I basically was just, my job was transferring theoretical amounts of money from computer A to computer B. And it was so boring. And one day I just was in the middle of London Bridge, and I turned around and thought, no, can't do this. So I went home and phoned in and said, like, I'm really sorry, this just isn't working out. And I went to work for a travel company and ended up being there 6 years. And it dealt with a lot of sort of backpacker travel and, you know, to travel to out of the way places. And I loved it. And when I was there, I used to write things up, and people would say, oh, you know, that's very good, you want to try and get it published. And I was just like, yeah, whatever. And then I sent some things off, and all of them got rejected. And then eventually I got one thing printed in the Evening Standard newspaper in London, which was, from memory, it was something about how Lima in Peru was very like Scarborough in Yorkshire, near where I grew up, if you were jet lagged and a bit drunk. And I think the whole article was based on the fact that when I was getting the taxi into town, very jet lagged, they were playing Oasis on the radio, and somehow this kind of led into a whole article. And I kind of went from there. So I started doing some things for the Evening Standard, and then I did one or two bits for the Times. And I can't quite remember how it happened, but I was asked to go in and do some shifts on the travel desk of the Times. And I ended up staying there 12 years. And I always used to joke that they couldn't ever fire me because I didn't really have a job, until one day I did get let go when they were having massive cuts of people at the newspaper. And since then, you know, it was quite a shock at the time, but since then, you've got to be resourceful. I still write for the Times, and I write for a whole bunch of other people here. I do newspapers and travel magazines in the States as well, in Dubai, in Australia. Bizarrely, one of my biggest ones is a travel magazine based in Indonesia, which a lot of people haven't heard of in Europe, but it's called Destination. See what they did there. Yes. And so it's kind of a broad range, but until everything went on pause this year, you know, I would be traveling all over the place quite regularly. And and now that's all come to a grinding halt at the moment.
Yes, that was going to be my next question of, you know, as we're recording, we're still slowly easing out of lockdown, but, you know, the travel restrictions are still present for many countries around the world. How have you personally dealt with lockdown, just, you know, personally, but also on a professional level?
Well, oh God, how do I think about it? I mean, now it's all a bit Groundhog Day, I've got to say. I think like most people, I've been going through ups and downs. I cannot pretend, you know, at the beginning I was, it was all about getting a six pack and learning Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
What are we now? 5 months down the road, no Chinese, no six pack. a bit more reading. The newspapers and magazines that I normally write for have not really been commissioning. So I just have not been busy, full stop. I have done a travel blog where I interview who I consider to be interesting people, mostly just because I want to do that. And also because I think someone told me now is not a time to be invisible. So you've got to keep your presence out there. I've done a lot more reading, mentally kind of up and weirdly up and down. I started fine. And then just every so often these days, I have sort of 3 days where I'm just completely listless and apathetic. And, you know, everyone's like, oh, come on, pull yourself out of it. And then on the fourth day, everything is fine again. But I don't really think it's anything that so many other people have not been going through.
Very true.
I think a lot of people are in a much worse situation than I am. I'm very lucky to live close to Hampstead Heath. So I've been running on there a lot, just generally enjoying what passes for the great outdoors in North London.
No, that's quite a nice place to be locked down, just right by the Heath. Plenty of park space to wander around.
Exactly.
Now, based on your experience, what are your views of the travel industry as a whole when, you know, as many countries are coming out of lockdown? How do you think, other airlines or hotels or other tourist boards, how are they, coping with this waking from hibernation?
I think everyone is flailing to some degree because really, at the moment, no one knows what's going to happen. I mean, my own personal view, which probably counts for nothing because I don't know anything more than anyone else, is that really nothing is going to get back to normal until we have some kind of vaccine, say in maybe years' time or slightly more. And from that point, I think things will return to normal. I think the next year is going to be tough. A lot of places are not going to survive, a lot of airlines, a lot of hotels. Here in the UK, you know, we have the furlough scheme where the Chancellor Rishi Sunak is giving money, which I think from memory ends in October. I think a lot of jobs are being artificially propped up, unfortunately, and when that money runs out, I think there's just going to be a lot of hotels are going to close down, a lot of people in the hospitality industry are going to close down, and I think it's going to be tough. If you look through travel media, you see a lot of articles on people speculating on the future. And they're kind of amusing in a unamusing kind of way because I just don't think people know. And, you know, if it fills up someone's half hour to speculate, then all well and good. But, things change so much. I mean, today, Melbourne, Australia has announced it's going back into 6 weeks of lockdown. I think they've just announced that travel across the border into New South Wales is going to halt from tomorrow, I think, which is the first time that's happened in 100 years. So I think it's partly a question of things moving very fluidly and changing. And also, I just don't think people know what the new normal is. I think things are falling into a bit of a pattern for the next year. But then after that, you know, once we have a vaccine, I think things will slowly get back to normal. I think also different people have different mindsets. I'm 52, and I don't think of myself as an old fart, but I think probably I am. I'm on the old fart end of the spectrum. From friends I've got who are a lot younger, I think they're raring to get on a plane. They want to go back to Ibiza. They want to meet their mates. And I think there's a general air that it won't affect them, whereas people my age, perhaps a bit younger, certainly older, just don't want to get on a plane at the moment. Probably don't even want to get on a train. And, you know, I feel desperately sorry for the hospitality industry because they obviously want to get back to normal as much as they can. But I mean, I'm supposed to be on holiday in Sardinia this week, and as it turned out, was not going to happen. But we cancelled it because we thought, what kind of holiday is it going to be anyway if, you know, you're washing your hands every 3 seconds and you're looking at who's close to you and there's Perspex screens everywhere and there's markers on the beach. And I think that is going to be how it is for the next year. And I think there will be those that don't mind that. And there will be those that think, you know what, let's just put things on a hold and see what happens next year. I think certainly here in the UK, there's going to be a big surge in domestic tourism, which personally I'm pleased about because, you know, I've been very lucky. I've traveled all over the world. But there are so many gorgeous bits of the UK that I haven't explored and a lot of people haven't explored. I mean, I'm originally from Yorkshire in the north. It strikes me as nuts that so many people in London and the south just don't consider going on holiday to Scotland. And it is just, you know, absolutely gorgeous. A few years ago, I was lucky. I went cycling through the Outer Hebrides and you fly from Glasgow and you go to the island of Barra. And it's the only place in the world where the plane lands on the beach. So for a start, that's pretty amazing. And then we got a hopper ticket on Calmac ferries and cycled all the way up to Stornoway. And I was there in May, and admittedly, the weather can be iffy, but we were lucky and it was fantastic. Honestly, it was just absolutely gorgeous. And, you know, you could say to so many people down in the south of England, oh, how about a holiday in the Outer Hebrides? And you might as well say Mars. And I just think there's so many fantastic places in the UK that we don't think of. I'm actually doing an article at the moment on there are 46 designated AONB, which are areas of outstanding natural beauty. And a lot of people have heard of the national parks, like, you know, the North Yorkshire Moors, the Yorkshire Dales, etc. But there are these 46 AONB. You know, embarrassingly, I hadn't heard of half of them. But in researching them, they're just gorgeous. And I think, you know, it's good to have a pause. It's good to look closer to home. And, you know, obviously it's great for the environment if we're not hopping on a plane every 5 seconds.
Now, as you were talking about, you know, the, perhaps the pivot that many countries are having to do with their marketing or their outreach from international to local audiences. I was watching sort of a news report on France 24 where they were covering the reopening of the Louvre Museum, and you know their big challenge as a museum is, you know, I think something like 70% of their visitors are overseas. So how does a institution like the Louvre reposition itself to local audiences who may have been, you know, either put off because of the crowds or just felt it was just more of a tourist site and not for locals? So it's be interesting to see how, you know, not just the UK, but perhaps other European countries or other countries around the world sort of having to reposition themselves in this, you know, as you say, the next few years where people are perhaps a bit hesitant to get on a long haul flight.
I think it's a human trait. I'm sure a psychologist would have a name for it, that we tend to look far rather than under our own nose. Because, you know, you mentioned the Louvre. I live about three tube stops from the British Museum, and I've been in London 22 years, and I've actually only been into the British Museum once, which I know is crazy, but, you know, it's always next weekend, and then... You know, next weekend comes and you don't bother. So I think it's a good opportunity to do that kind of thing and just explore closer to home. Hyper local tourism. What's right under our noses?
Yes, local adventures.
Local adventures, mini adventures. Give yourself a mini adventure.
Yes, you mentioned earlier that you know during this downtime that it is you know it's dangerous to not be visible. So you've talked about your blogging and interviewing other sort of travel thought leaders. Is it the same with either travel brands or tourist boards? Do you see, you know, have some, you know, rose to the challenge of repositioning themselves or becoming more visible when people are a bit, you know, hesitant or not thinking of travel at the moment?
To be honest, I think many that I have seen have been a bit, what's the phrase? Rabbit in headlights, is that the phrase? Mm-hmm. a lot of tourist boards are government institutions with public money. I think they tend to be quite conservative at the best of times. I've got to be honest, over the past few months, I can't really remember any that have massively stood out, apart from I did see a very good video on YouTube from Nova Scotia Tourism, which was all about, you know, come back and see us when you can. But it was just lovely images and good music, and it was a bit folksy. But for me, it worked. I think, again, a lot of tourist boards are just, they just don't know what's going to happen. And the things are changing so quickly. You know, they have to go through hoops. They have to get things signed off. They could do a commercial or whatever, and it takes them 3 weeks to get it all up and running. And then by that stage, everything has changed.
Sure.
I don't think they're very fluid at the best of times. You know, some stand out for sure. Over the years, there've been some great tourism campaigns. But I think, you know, over the last few months, everyone has been so blindsided by this. It's caught most people, you know, by surprise. I think it's just the shock. You know, everyone's like, if someone had told you that all this was going to happen on New Year's Eve, and like in 2020, you know, I mean, I've got a mask that's made out of a recycled bra. And you know, if I'm not a betting man, if someone said you will be walking around North London wearing a recycled bra, then I would have thought, yeah, I'm not going to put money on that. But here we are. And I don't think tourist boards as yet have really, I'm desperately trying to think now of one that's risen to the challenge. And I'm not sure I can, to be honest.
Yeah, I think just for me, you know, I've received emails from various airlines who, you know, as a country start opening up, I'm getting these messages where they talk about what the experience will be on the flight. So it's all about the health. It's all about trust. It's all about communicating a new normal. But you know, I think, as you said before, you know, once I arrive at a destination, if the museums aren't open, or if, you know, I'm having to wash my hands every 5 minutes, it's not really the best holiday.
Well, I think airlines have been some of the biggest bogeymen in all this. Because of the refund situation. And so they, I don't think really any of them have come out of this glowing. I think in terms of, you know, experience now, it's purely getting you from A to B. Whereas before, you know, Qatar Airways, it was all about the luxury and the meals and the lounge and the TV and the experience and the smiling cabin crew. Now it's, we will get you to your destination and you will not have caught COVID-19 from us. And yes. There is no, you know, there's just no, I love flying. I used to love it a lot more. But now it really, you know, there's just nothing special about it. And I think especially now, but of course, you know, the airlines are going to be cutting back massively. British Airways are slashing their crew. Virgin have done that. I think it's hard to have sympathy for airlines at the moment. It's easy to have sympathy for their crew, who I think are doing a fantastic job. But yeah, airline management themselves, I don't think anyone's really come out of it smiling.
So if we sort of put COVID aside at the moment and think about the good old days of travel of, say, 2019, seems so long ago. But, you know, when we think about marketing, specifically social media, how do you think, you know, the rise of social and perhaps these new band of influencers, how they sort of shape the way people talk about travel?
I think to a degree it's an age thing. I mean, going back to this old fart thing, I was chatting to a marketing manager of a large US hotel chain last year. And I was saying to him, you know, if you have someone posing by the pool on Instagram, does that really drive your sales? And his answer to me was something along the lines of, you know, get with the program, granddad. because I, you know, write for the likes of the Times, Condé Nast Traveler, etc. And as he pointed out, really those segments these days, like physical paper magazines, which I personally still enjoy, you know, a bit of a broad brushstroke to say it, but it's really for the 50 plus audience. Mm-hmm. Whereas if someone is posing by the pool in a bikini or a, you know, a pair of all of our brands, then that's really for a much younger audience. And that younger audience is obviously the travelers of the future. I think some, as you won't be surprised to hear, haven't really got into the whole influencer thing. But I know there are tourist boards out there who do spend, well, up to now, a large amount of money on the influencer market. They'll get people out. And I think these days it's not always about number of followers. You know, it's about targeting and micro followers, or, you know, if you have a group of 2,000 people who would go out and spend, it's better than having 80,000 people who may be 16 years old and just clicking on you because you've mentioned Britney Spears or something. So I think I talk to a lot of PRs and tourist boards, and I think a lot of them have got their head around the whole influencer thing. I think a lot of PR, I describe it as throwing mud at the wall. Some of it sticks and some of it just falls off. And I think that's particularly true with the influencer market. I think that a lot of people, you know, they will invite influencers, but they still don't really know what benefit they get from that. And if you ask them, they don't really know. So I think that if you're an influencer, have a niche, know what you're doing. And I think that's increasingly the way forward. I do personally think that, you know, I write for newspapers and magazines. I think COVID will speed up the demise of physical newspapers. I don't know when it will be, but maybe 10 years, I don't know. I think at best people will be reading The Guardian, The Times, whatever, on an iPad or whatever we have in 10 years' time. I think, to put it bluntly, as older readers of physical newspapers die, they're just not being replaced by younger readers. Someone who's 20 generally does not go out and buy a physical newspaper. They will read news online. And I think that will be accompanied by the increase in social media. It's going to get more important. But I think at the moment, a lot of tourist boards, a lot of PRs just haven't quite got their heads around what that influence will be.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting debate to have, because it's probably something that's going to be influenced by the influencers. You know, I think a lot of people out there want information. I have a friend who lives in New York, and when she goes off traveling to, say, Amsterdam, she will Google a food blog, and there's almost as much information about travel from a food blog as there is from a travel blog. Because I think the problem with a lot of travel blogs, as far as I've seen, they don't actually give that much useful information. A lot of travel social media tends to be almost an online diary. Diary, I went to Paris and .. That you look at them, there actually isn't an awful lot of information in there. So I think the ones that will succeed will be the places that tell you, you know, if you're in Paris, where do I want to go for breakfast? Tell me. Or, you know, how, in normal times, how do I see the Louvre without the crowds? I think people need to be much more information focused.
Yeah, I guess it is perhaps better understanding, I guess, if you as an influencer are asking why you're writing, who is your audience, and what do they want from you? So on one hand, you know, it's great to fill your Instagram with, you know, great colorful photos of your hotel or the great food that you're eating. But if the audience is, you know, as you say, wanting more practical, like, how do I get from the airport to the center of town? What's the cheapest way to do that? You know, perhaps there is room for developing that sort of niche.
I think so.
With when you mentioned earlier of the shifting, I guess, media consumption of, you know, the shift away from, you know, physical media, whether it's newspapers or magazines, onto either online or social, do you think that will have an effect on the type of content that is created? So, for example, are we going to shift away from, you know, in-depth, you know, insights into city living that focuses on, you know, the sounds and the smells versus, you know, on social, where it is that the stereotypical image of the Eiffel Tower, but, you know, as you said, nothing about the food or the ambiance?
I think travel is such a huge remit generally that there is space for all that. I think so many, you know, travel is a multi-billion or even trillion dollar enterprise, that even a small chunk of that is actually going to be quite big, which I think, you know, for online influencers, et cetera, is interesting and exciting because, you know, you could go big and cover something that has a lot of interest, or you could be quite niche. And there will still be a lot of people who are interested in your niche. I mean, my mum was always saying to me, oh, you ought to go and do, you know, set this up in travel. And I'd be like, mum, it's, you know, it's covered. And just think of a niche and, you know, it's pretty much done. And I think that can transfer over into the digital realm. So I think people, if you have an idea and you have the wherewithal to make it happen, I think you can do that. And I think, you know, there will be a market for it.
Now, again, thinking of the pre-COVID times, one of the big terms when it comes to travel was the term of over-tourism. So, you know, we've seen, you know, the big cruise ships coming into Venice, you know, the crowds in Kyoto. You know, what are your views in general of that term over-tourism? And, you know, is that the outcome of marketing campaigns, or is that perhaps a bit more complicated than that?
Well, I think over-tourism, it's very definitely a thing. It's somewhat difficult for me to talk about personally, just in the sense that, you know, you could very strongly argue that people like me encourage it. And also, you know, I could have a I'm all right, Jack, outlook on it, because, you know, I've been very lucky. I've done a lot of these things, and now along I come wagging my finger saying, well, I've seen them, they're fantastic, but, you know, oh no, you can't go. So it's just a question of how you manage that. You know, I first started traveling, I when I was a student, I went round by train behind the Iron Curtain. I went in, you know, a lot of the revolution in the Czech Republic and in Romania were in December 89, and I went traveling that summer from Berlin down to Istanbul. And, you know, so I look back and, you know, obviously then there were, you know, no travelers then, but the you know, the opening up of Eastern Europe has sort of unleashed a lot of travelers. The economic boom in China has unleashed a lot of travelers. And, you know, I can sit here and go, oh, it's terrible. I went to Angkor Wat and it was just overrun with Chinese tourists and it was overrun with Korean tourists. But, you know, who am I to say, to wag my finger and say they shouldn't be there? I think it's how it's managed. And yes, you know, obviously you look at Venice and it's heaving. I personally, and again, it goes back to this I'm all right, Jack thing. So, you know, if anyone wants to write in and say, well, that's completely two-faced, then do, because it is. But, you know, you look at the tourist numbers in some places, and I would really hope that this current pandemic pause will make people think about their choices. I mean, I have definitely in the past flown too much. I think one thing that, you know, leading up to this anyway, you know, I'm definitely looking at traveling much more to Europe by train where I can. And I mean, last year I went to Berlin, for example, which went there and back by train in a day each way, and it was fine to do that. So I think it's just how we manage over tourism. And I hope this pandemic pause does make us think about the ways in which we travel and hopefully travel more meaningfully. But having said that, will it? I don't know. I'm rather pessimistic. I think, you know, for obvious reasons, a lot of people want to travel. And I think that we will, you know, as soon as Ryanair starts having some 15.99 sales, we'll all be off again. But I think we do have to have a look at tourism and its effects. And also, you know, you can see locally the big tourist cities in Europe, places like Barcelona and Lisbon and Berlin. You know, there's graffiti everywhere, especially with things like Airbnb, which, you know, don't want to get into it too deeply, but have disrupted the local market for housing. And a lot of people feel very strongly. And, you know, will this pandemic pause alter that? It would be good if we at least had a rethink. And I just think travel more meaningfully. Think about where you're spending your money. You know, as you mentioned cruising, it's a good example. You know, I personally think cruising is the right holiday for the right person. I've been on one or two cruises, and personally, it's not for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think some of those huge mega ships, you know, you do have to think about the possible side effects of pollution in the Caribbean, you know, how they interact with the local markets and are they actually putting that much into them, the local islands, you know, how the crew are treated, those kind of things. And again, it would be great if we came out of this pandemic pause just thinking more meaningfully about those kind of holidays.
No, good point. It's, you know, as I said, it's a chance for us to have a reset of how we want our cities and travel to sort of be reshaped in the future once, you know, hopefully things return back to normal.
Exactly.
So we've talked about the past, the good old days, pre-COVID. We talked about COVID, living through it at the moment. But thinking of the future, what's, you know, once there's a vaccine, once everyone is feeling safe and ready to go, what's on top of your list of places to visit?
I genuinely want to explore a lot more of the UK. I know that's a goody two-shoes answer, but, you know, I have been lucky. I've seen places in the world, you know, and I definitely have some places I want to go back to. But it just has made me realize there are huge chunks of the UK that I haven't seen. And I really want to do a lot more hiking, especially in the far northwest of Scotland, around Sutherland, and in Wales. And I downloaded the Irish broadcaster RTE. They have a equivalent of iPlayer, and I downloaded that and I was watching some travel shows on that. And so, you know, Ireland, it's just there, but I really haven't traveled. I think the last time I went there was as a kid on holiday when I was about 10. And so I think my focus is going to be a lot more local. But ask me again in February when it's peeing in the rain and someone says, do you want to go to Cape Town? I'll be like, yes, please.
Excellent. Well, hopefully you'll be either hiking or on the beach in Cape Town before we know it.
Yeah, let's hope so. I think it's going to be a funny year, but, you know, we will get through it. And it's interesting times.
Interesting times indeed. So we are sort of close to the end of our episode, but before you leave, I wanted to just ask a couple questions that I've asked other interviewees for the Distillery podcasts. So the first one is, you know, what is the last thing you actually recommended to a friend or family member? Now, this could be like a TV show, a recipe, a new band.
God, everyone's always telling me what to watch on Netflix, and I'm the only person who hasn't seen Tiger King. But there was, well, Schitt's Creek. I love Schitt's Creek. Get it, slow burner. If you can make it through to the end of series one, then it's great. Love it. But also on Netflix, there's something called Mindhunter, which is also a slow burner, and it's about cops. This sounds really dark. Cops interviewing serial killers back in the 1970s, trying to profile them in order to see how they tick and hopefully prevent other serial killers. That's probably the last thing I've recommended to people.
Okay, so a couple of shows to add to our list on Netflix. Finally, what are you a fan of that actually might surprise most people?
God, I'm not sure. I think I'm a fairly open book. I'm not sure what would surprise people. Nando's. I have an unhealthy obsession with Nando's. I know that's not sort of, you know, really that out there. But living in London, it does my head in normal times when you try and get a reservation for somewhere anything less than 2 weeks in advance and everywhere is closed. There's always trusty Nando's.
There's can't beat a cheeky Nando's. What is your preferred spice level?
Only medium. I mean, let's not go over the top. But my dad is someone who thinks salt and pepper are exotic spices. At least I'm doing better than him.
All right. So, Will, if people wanted to get in contact with you, what's the best way?
I have a website, willhyde.com, and my details are on there. My surname, Hyde, is spelt with an I, not a Y. So just pop willhyde.com in there, and Bob's your uncle.
Fantastic. Well, thanks to Will for joining me today, and we want to thank everyone for listening. Now, you could follow Distillery on our socials at We Are Distillery, and make sure to stay safe, wash your hands, and we look forward to welcoming you to our next podcast soon. Thanks, everyone.